We set the bar high for all of those other guests this afternoon, right out of the box, by welcoming back to the show Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Hello, Bob.
Good afternoon.
My goodness, this Celtics team has been fun to watch so far. This is you've been watching Celtics a long time. This has to be as likable a group as you've seen.
Well, I put them in the top four or five in terms of likability, lovability, rootability. Because, you know, we know this whole circumstance. Every team has its own dynamics and its own frame of reference. And the frame of reference with this team is that it's at least a year ahead of schedule. And that once the season was supposed to be messed up in a big way, 5 minutes into the season, that didn't happen. It was supposed to be messed up in another big way. Kyrie Irving went down, and that didn't happen. And so here we are. And the hits just keep on coming, and the nightly excitement builds, and there's nothing not to like.
And obviously the players are playing great. Brad Stevens is doing a whale of a job, but credit also needs to go to Danny Ainge for what he's been able to do to plug leaks in the ship and find the right guys that would work well together.
That's right. He made the big trade with the Nets, and that is another gift that keeps on giving. But you've got to pick the right people. Yes, they've had two threes in a six, and they have two threes in a six in their first and their six man rotation. But other people have blown people and made the wrong call. You know, the under President Darko Milicic thing comes to mind. But Jaylen Brown, when he was the third pick, I don't think everybody would have done that. And I know I didn't know enough about him to have a strong feeling about it. I said, well, I guess I got to trust Danny. Tatum, a little different matter, but still Danny traded down to get him and forsook the number one pick, and that looks good. Marcus Smart, not everybody was crazy about him. He wasn't an offensive threat. He wasn't this, he wasn't that, but Danny saw something he liked, and we're seeing exactly what it is that he did like. Horford, okay. But that was a very good signing, a great signing. Daniel Theis, who no one talks about anymore, but was an important part of the rotation, got him out of Germany. Shane Larkin got him out of Europe, and he was making a good contribution. Now, we can go on and on. So, yes, Danny deserves full credit for this. And by the way, for the whole 15 years of success that the Celtics, you know, have had with the second round now going around with a team that looks like it's going to be a contender for years to come.
What do they have to do to avoid letting Cleveland back in this thing when they take to the road?
I think they just have to keep up the rotations and really have the concentration, and don't let Kyle Korver, don't let J.R. Smith, don't let Kevin Love go off to the extent where continually they're going to hurt you. LeBron, look, you can say all you want about the defense they had against him. He had 42 points and 12 assists. So he produced 64 points, 66 points. So that's a lot, and they did a nice job in a sense, but there it is. But the others are the key, and they are all capable, the guys I mentioned, of getting anywhere from 25 up, and you got to do the job on them.
You had a wonderful piece in the Globe on Sunday about the greatest of all time, and it's hard to compare players across eras, and we seem to have this need to identify just one guy, but as you said, look, Jordan was amazing. What Bill Russell did can't be ever matched again. But LeBron is at the top of his game and certainly belongs in that conversation.
Well, the thing about it, to me, there's two discussions. And, you know, if you're going to talk about the greatest players of all time, if you're going to just go regardless of position and a career accomplishment, then three guys that have to be in the top 10 and probably in the top five in some order are centers. And that's Russell, Chamberlain, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So centers are different, though. Their job description is entirely different. Their skill set's entirely different. And even that is changing now because the conventional center is out of fashion. Maybe it'll come back, maybe it won't. But when I talk about greatest of all time, I'm talking about players who have a range of skill at both ends of the floor who can hurt you in a multiple fashion and have what I call mastered the game. The game, they see it in advance. They can adjust. They can make things happen that other people can't. And that really comes down to four people. Four or five people. Oscar Robertson was the gold standard until Magic and Larry came along. Then came Michael. So now we're up to four. And now comes LeBron. We're at five. And some people would throw Kobe in there. And I can understand him being in the argument. So there's six people that we're talking about at maximum. Nobody else need apply. All right? six people who at some point in time in the course of history have mastered the game, and you can sit down and make a case for them and why any of them is the answer. But to me, the guy who answers the most check marks is LeBron.
We're talking with Bob Ryan here on Downtown. We discussed the Celtics' likability in this Red Sox team. Certainly pretty likable so far. They're awfully good. J.D. Martinez is the epitome of a professional hitter. Are they still, in your mind, chasing the Yankees for much of this season?
Well, I would have to say I fear the Yankees. And they line up. And right now, it's not even firing on all cylinders. Gregorius, who was player of the month in April, is in a horrendous slump. Stanton is not really hitting the way he could totally. Neither is Sanchez, but they've got four guys with 10 homers already. That's the problem. That's the big problem. And if their pitching holds up, and I do think this, Rich, I think you can assume that there will be a major buyer on July 31, trading deadline, a major buyer. And they're going to go be the top dollar for whoever has to be the most marketable starting pitcher. Red Sox wouldn't be hurting in that derby either, but I think the Yankees are going to be in it. They do have that bullpen, which hasn't had the consistency it should, but they've still got some great arms, and I fear them, yes. Red Sox, I trust, are going to improve when they get to Pedroia. Even a ball hit last night, I remember, I said, but Pedroia gets that ball. Nunez didn't get it. So Pedroia is going to help the situation. The catchers are not hitting at all. It'd be nice they got to pull their weight a little bit more. And, of course, the bullpen thing. This Carson thing, Smith thing's annoying, really needless. His attitude is very disturbing. His explanation is ridiculous. And they do need a little boost, a bullpen boost. And even Kimbrel, he's not quite the same. Give him another home run last night. Last year he struck out 50% of the batters. He's not doing that. He's still good, but maybe we've seen his very, very, very best.
Bob, what do you think will be the impact on professional sports and perhaps college sports as well of the ruling earlier in the week by the Supreme Court on sports betting?
I am sitting back and I'm reading everything I can and taking in all the opinions of people. As someone who is not interested in betting, not naive, and I totally understand its scope both here and internationally, and that it's an itch that people need to scratch, and I don't need to scratch it, so I'm disdainful of it, but I understand it. A lot of people think it's going to be a credible boon to interest in sport. I don't think it's the right kind of interest, even though the same way I don't think fantasy sports are the right kind of interest. People are going to do what they want to do. I can't make them unlike it. I don't give a damn about it, but people do. And what I read and hear, a lot of people think this is going to have an incredible impact monetarily on it, on sports. That you could, what if you get to the circumstance where I've been reading today that you will be able to say, you're going to be able to bet on what the next pitch is going to be, or what the next out's going to be, or what the next base hit's going to, who's going to break up the no-hitter, whatever it is, and in real time. That's a dimension that we've never encountered before in terms of governmental supervision, if you will. We know, I used to hear the jokes. I first came to Boston, Rich, 54 years ago, and I honestly heard stories they used to tell about people in the old Braves field that sat down there in right field, in the old jury box, they called it, and they literally bet on every pitch. I laughed at it, but those stories were being told. So I know those people exist, and they always have existed, and probably always will exist.
Bob, we're working on a special on 1968 and the 50th anniversary. Well, these are certainly challenging times we're in today, but in your lifetime, has there been a more traumatic year in America than 68?
Well, no, between what happened at the Democratic Convention and what happened at Mexico City and what happened in across America, of course, it was a tumultuous year, it was clearly a milestone year in American history. There's no doubt about it. And so, yes, I would have to say that it'd be pretty foolish to say otherwise.
And in sports that year, it was some remarkable occurrences in baseball. Of course, the year of the pitcher, Denny McClain with 31 wins, the great season from Bob Gibson, Louis Tion. You mentioned the Olympic protest, Bill Russell winning a championship as a player coach. In your mind, what was the biggest sporting event of that year?
I think the Olympics took precedence because of at the moment that Carlos and they did what they did, Tommy Smith, and I think that dominated. of course, brought leading me before the Olympics, the boycott of the Olympics by the likes of Lew Alcindor and Melvin Hayes and Wes Unseld and all the great African-American players who would have comprised the team. And then we win the gold medal because of a 19-year-old kid from Mississippi named Spencer Haywood, who comes out of Trinidad Junior College, and without whom we do not win that gold medal in 68. The Olympics were of course, even before the Olympics, Mexico City had riots. There were people protesting the very presence of the Olympics there. I think when you have to put things in a global context, yeah, our American sports stuff was interesting, and it was such an important year in baseball pitching history that they lowered the mound as a result, and it's never gone back. That's when offense bottomed out at all. And also, well, one other thing for American sports interest, the last year of the real pennant race, because that's
right,
the last year prior to the expansion of the playoffs. And so the last real pennant races were won by the Detroit Tigers and St. Louis Cardinals. And that was an interesting World Series, too. But Detroit, the ball club was right front and center in helping to try to get people's minds off the real world in Detroit, with Detroit burning down. And so it was a truly amazing year, yes.
Bob, I saw you tweet yesterday about the passing of Tom Wolfe. What was it about him that made him such an incredible writer?
I believe, I think all writers have to tip their hat to Tom Wolfe. Anybody who's a writer, I don't care if you're a sports writer, or a food writer, a political writer, fiction, nonfiction. I think this, 99.999% of us, and that means all of us, whether it's you're talking about Grisham, or you're talking about Ryan, or you're talking about, doesn't matter. 99.9% of us are derivative in some way. The style, quote unquote, that we take on is the accumulation of influences of other people, either direct or indirect, whether either consciously or unconsciously. We are putting together a style based on what we've seen other people put down, and we incorporate into our writing the elements of other people. The one unquestioned individual who broke the mold and who was unlike anybody else who had gained popular appeal in our lifetime was Tom Wolfe. Nobody could imitate or come close to matching Tom Wolfe in what he chose to do, and it was the most entertaining style of all of anybody, I think. And so that's that. Even if he had never written Bonfire of the Vanities, the nonfiction work he did in Esquire, and the nonfiction books that were published as a result of his compilations are unmatched and unexcelled. So I think he's the greatest single individual stylist, and who had more individual style than anyone in the last, maybe even 20th century America.
Bob Ryan with us here on Downtown. Bob, always fun. Thank you so much, as always. We'll do it again soon.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.